Hello, everyone. Dan Dillman here, bringing you a little of this, a little of that. You're tuned to 101.5 on your FM dial, Huntley Community Radio. Thank you very much for tuning in. Today, we'll bring you some information, some entertainment, and maybe a smile or two, a sprinkling of amusement. Our first story, however, is not at all amusing. It's about the severe drought that is occurring in the western part of the United States. I wanted to give you a short story about it, what had happened this spring and summer and into the fall, and is still going on. More than 40 million Americans are now facing dangerous triple-digit temperatures as last summer's first major heat wave swept across the West. These are places that do get warm during the summer, but they don't usually experience as many and as frequent triple-digit temperature days. Long-established records were tied this summer, or they were toppled, as the mercury spiked to 107 degrees in Salt Lake City, 108 in Billings, Montana, and 121 in Needles, California. And facing surging electricity demands, Texas grid operators asked the residents of the state to turn down their air conditioning. In the Lake Oroville Dam area in California, which is the nation's tallest dam at 770 feet, electricity production was soon to be affected. Another 60 feet or so of evaporation, which could come within weeks, would drop the water line below the turbines that provide the power to the broader grid. And so power companies across California prepared residents for a summer of rolling outages. The extreme heat and drought have turned much of the West into a tinderbox. Parched vegetation combusts more easily, giving wildfires more energy to burn. And already, firefighters were battling 15 blazes in Arizona and 9 in New Mexico, and over 24 more across the western states. This was happening last summer. In the mountains outside Phoenix, the Telegraph and Mescal fires consumed over 200,000 acres. Through the haze of smoke accumulating high in the atmosphere, the sky had the dull yellow tinge of an old bruise. The sun was a scorching red sphere. Much of the American West, parched from Northern California through Arizona and New Mexico, was drying out at a record pace. The onset of this severe drought was far quicker than previous ones, the result of a meager Sierra Nevada snowpack, an early seasonal heat that evaporated the runoff, which was needed to fill the reservoirs and the rivers. It's difficult to point to one occurrence and say, this is climate change. But this year, the second consecutive that the nation's most populous state will be in drought has been different from previous years. Only 20% of the expected runoff from an already well below average snowpack was to arrive in reservoirs. The rest evaporated during the unseasonably warm spring, last spring. The heat and drought have forced decisions from farmers and policymakers much earlier than in years past. What crops to grow, what fields to fallow, how much to spend on protecting the state's $50 billion agricultural industry. The governor declared a drought emergency in 41 of the state's 58 counties, covering about a third of the state's population. And he set aside $5 billion to manage some of the immediate consequences. He declared a state of emergency because of the heat wave, a move that made more energy available within the power grid. But beyond California, more than half of the western United States was and still is in the grips of extreme or exceptional drought, indicating widespread water shortages and major impacts on crops and pasture. In California, Arizona, and Utah, the period between June 2020 and May 2021 was the driest ever recorded. Every dry year is not the same as every other dry year, and every drought is not the same as every other drought. But this one has come on hot and quick. And that has created an acceleration of the problems that you might otherwise see, in part because ecosystems, forests, and groundwater resources haven't recovered from the last one. The heat and drought are hallmarks of climate change. Human activities have already raised global average temperatures more than a degree Celsius, 1.8 degrees Fahrenheit, above pre-industrial levels. In many Western states, the increase was close to 2 degrees Celsius, a threshold the United Nations associates with catastrophic warming. For much of the West, the future is now. Last year, wildfires burned more than 4 million acres across California. This was the most in state history. And now at least one quarter of the state's residents live in high fire risk zones, according to state fire officials. In Arizona, Phoenix now experiences more than 100 days of triple digit temperatures every year. Mountain snowpacks have declined 15 to 30% since the middle of the century, and water levels in Lake Mead, the country's largest reservoir, have never been as low as now. Under a worst case scenario, in which emissions continue to increase, scientists anticipate that Western summers could warm by as much as 4 degrees Celsius. Drought severity will triple. Wildfire season will become a year-round event rather than a seasonal one. If the nation is forced to put restrictions on water from the Colorado River, farmers in Arizona will be among the very first to see cuts. Because in a decades-old deal, the state agreed to claim the most junior rights to the river if the federal government helped build an aqueduct to transport water to cities and fields across the state. But now those growers of produce, hay and cotton, may see their entire allotments cut. They'll likely have to fallow up to 40% of what was being grown before. Not a pleasant prospect. Even desert plants and animals, creatures that evolved to withstand water scarcity, are unable to cope with the ongoing drought. Creosote and mesquite bushes wither. Giant saguaro cactuses are shriveling in the heat. Last fall, wildlife biologists were shocked when migrating birds began dying by the hundreds of thousands. Examining the carcasses, the animals were seen to be emaciated. Years of drought had so depleted their food supply that birds breaking down their muscles in their wings just to maintain enough energy to fly. A freak windstorm and one of the worst fire seasons on record likely sealed their fates. We're setting ourselves up to be in the same situation, according to an ornithologist at New Mexico State University who studied the die-off. And he said, these are dangerous times for both animals and people. From heat and drought, we go to cartography, the making of maps. Let's go back to 1569, when Flemish cartographer Gerardus Mercator flattened the Earth's surface onto paper. He gave sailors the tools to manage ocean voyages as a result. But he also distorted the size of countries nearest the poles. North America appears abnormally large on his projection. Despite the inaccuracies, the Mercator projection became the norm and was even the basis of Google Maps until as recently as 2018. But astrophysicist J. Richard Gott, along with colleagues David Goldberg and Robert Vanderbay, set out in 2019 to fix the inaccuracies, and they came up with a double-sided map that is similar to a vinyl record in shape. It improves geographical parity between continents. It finally represents the southern hemisphere as fairly as possible on paper. And this map is free to access online. And the scientists are working with publishers to make it widely available for sale in the future. So if you're looking for this online, look up the Vanderbay, V-A-N-D-E-R-B-E-I, projection. It'll be there, and you'll see that it's very much an improvement over the Mercator. And we have another bit of improvement here. And that is a book that has just been published about the Rosetta Stone. The stone's discovery was monumental, but linguists still faced decades of trial and error after that. And a new book just published called The Writing of the Gods. It's by Edward Dalnick and published by Scribner. He tells us some fascinating things about the Rosetta Stone and how it is seen now, or can be seen now. When a soldier in Napoleon's army discovered the Rosetta Stone in a pile of rubble in Egypt in 1799, hope soared that the linguistic puzzle of the ages, that is, the meaning of the hieroglyphs, might finally be solved. And in The Writing of the Gods, The Race to Decode the Rosetta Stone, Dalnick tells the fascinating story of one of the world's most famous objects and the 20-year odyssey to unravel its mysteries. Well, the Rosetta Stone, you see, was a 4 by 3 foot slab of granite on which were found 3 sets of inscriptions, Egyptian hieroglyphs, ancient Greek, and Coptic. If the writings were translations of the same information, then the latter scripts could provide an invaluable toehold into the Egyptian symbols. The difficulties of attempting to decipher the hieroglyphs, even with the help of the Rosetta Stone, were legion. Codebreakers needed reams of text in order to distinguish patterns. But the Rosetta Stone, because it is broken at the top, contains only 14 lines of hieroglyphs, and many more examples would be needed than that. And then, too, the assumption that the 3 scripts were word-for-word translations of one another proved to be false. And though they align in a loose way, Dalnick likens them to 3 people's summaries of the same movie. Not knowing this, the early decipherers found themselves lost in a veritable maze. Hieroglyphs have been objects of fascination since the 4th century, studied endlessly and imbued with reverence. They were regarded by linguists and historians as a mystical and supreme form of writing, which stood for ideas and not mere letters or sounds. Scholars presumed the strange and beautiful symbols had a higher purpose, that every hieroglyph text was a meditation on the nature of time and space. The early translators of the Rosetta Stone threw themselves into the task of rendering the nearly intact Greek inscription, hoping to find some grand ideas expressed there. Something along the lines of the Magna Carta, I suppose, or perhaps the Bill of Rights. Instead, they found a mundane message filled with tributes to the Pharaoh, including a litany of his good deeds. Before the discovery of the Rosetta Stone, some of the most accomplished linguists in Europe had attempted to decode the hieroglyphs. Studying the stone brought some insights, but little real progress was made. By 1814, virtually everyone had given up, opening the field to outsiders, including two brilliant rivals who are the heroes of Dalnick's book. This is Thomas Young and Jean-Francois Champollion. Dalnick makes accessible the complex science and art of decoding and does a masterful job of guiding the reader through the labyrinth of false starts, wrong turns, and dead ends that prefaced a fuller understanding of the symbols. And so, recommend this book. If Egyptology is of interest to you, and especially the Rosetta Stone. And now we'll take a short break. We're going to end the show today with a new category, what I call the bottom line, a number of items which should be of interest to you. They're not long, and here we go. In 7 years, Amazon has grown from zero share of the U.S. shipping market to 21%. It's passed FedEx, which has 16%. The USPS remains dominant with 38%, while UPS accounts for 24%. And a record 58% of companies increased pay during the third quarter, and nearly the same share expect to do it again in the coming months. About 47% of the respondents to this survey reported shortages of skilled labor in October. And that was up from 32% in the prior quarter. And then, you lovers of champagne, you've been doing your work. Champagne sales are expected to top an estimated 305 million bottles around the world in 2021, and that would be a significant rebound from a very unfestive 2020, when the region reported only 244 million bottles, when that was an 18% drop from the year prior. So you champagne lovers, you brought it back. And the number of cigarettes sold to wholesalers and retailers nationwide increased by about 8 million in 2020 from the year earlier. It's the first time annual cigarette sales in America have risen in 20 years. And finally, there were 17 million undergraduate students in U.S. colleges this past fall. That was a 6% decline from 2019. That's the largest two-year enrollment drop in 50 years. Community college enrollment is also down. It's down 14% from 2 years ago. And a good way to end today's show is to tell you about a New York woman who sued Kellogg's in a $5 million class action suit, claiming that its strawberry Pop-Tarts contain more apple and pear than strawberries. She accused the company of deceptive labeling, contending that apple and pear are less valued fruits. I disagree. On the other hand, we are at the end of today's show. I'm so happy that you tuned in and that you'll be with us again next week. Remember, 101.5 on your FM dial. We entertain you, we inform you, and we try to amuse you at least a little. So, my friends, take care, stay healthy, be kind to others. And now it's time for my friend Willie Nelson and I to head on down the road again, looking for more items to give you in our next program. Willie, I think it's time for you to start. Away we go.